Accession number 32500, real one.
Yeah, that's the real one. James, can you tell me where you were born, please?
Born in 1990 in Bradford, West Yorkshire.
So can you tell us something about your family?
Bulk of them have been in the military themselves. My parents are there currently in the prison service.
And I take it you got your interest in the military from them, did you?
First of all, it was from my dad. He was in the engineers. Then I found out my uncle was in the artillery and granddad from military police, just took off from there.
And have you always sort of considered the army as a sort of career?
The armed forces I have, yeah. Originally it was the RAF, didn't have the grades, so went straight to the army.
Okay, tell me a little bit about your education.
Got good grades, to be honest. That's a bit big-headed. Average, really. Quite good at languages.
But you were looking there for the armed services, were you, when you left school?
Yeah.
How did you go about doing that? Just how did you go on signing up?
Oh, I just went directly to my careers office. Didn't have much help from school, just straight in.
And what did you do when you go up? Did you have to sign up for a set period of time? Did you have a choice of regiment? Did you know what you were going
to do? They did tell me a lot what I was doing. They said how long I'd have to sign up for, my options. Very good in that manner. Told me exactly what I was getting into.
And was the infantry your first choice?
Originally, no. My original choice was the military police, like my grandfather, but just got convinced otherwise.
So what's the first thing? You've gone to the careers office, you signed on, what's the next stage?
Next stage is a selection, which is a couple of days. I did mine here in Pirbright. Just to give them a rough idea of your team skills, your fitness level, pass a couple of tests. If you pass them, you're off to training.
And had you been given a sort of idea of what to expect from you, your family?
Not really, no.
They hadn't really discussed it with
no.
you?
No.
So you obviously passed your selection. What's the next thing you have to do?
I only had to wait a couple of months, but then you move into your phase one training. Mine was up in Catterick, Infantry Training Centre. I did my phase two there as well. Altogether, it's a 26-week course.
So tell me about the phase one. What does that? What happens as you arrive?
Phase one is what every soldier does. It's your very basic skills. It's getting you to a fairly good level of fitness. Just getting into the swing of military life, really.
What was your fitness levels like before you joined?
Not great, to be honest. A bit lazy. But training sort of me out. I started getting up.
And how do they do that? Do they obviously, is it a graded thing, so you do a certain length of fitness routine?
Yes.
To build up?
Yeah, it's fairly gradual. I mean, when I first started training, the first run you do, I believe it was only 3 miles. Build you up 4, 5, 6, and then start your tabbing. Start easy, mile and a half, 3, 4, building up to your CFT, 8 miles.
And who's doing the instruction at that stage?
Yeah, your training teams. All of them are corporals, except obviously your platoon sergeant and platoon commander, which is an officer. They look after you quite well up there, always catered for.
And what are the things that you're learning in phase one? Are you getting familiar with weapons at that stage?
Yeah, that's when you're first introduced to the rifle. Always a good thing. Other stuff is start your map reading, navigation, start a bit of drill, everyone's hate. start a bit of NBC. General stuff.
Tell me about the drill. How do you drill?
Drill is... people fret about it. It's easy. It's just marching is just walking with swagger. That's what I've always thought of it. It's no different.
So do you do it in ranks? Or do you do it in columns?
You do it in three ranks. However many men you need, really. Can't have a set number.
And you said that obviously you're getting familiar with the rifle. What level are you going into at phase one?
Phase one, it is basic. Every soldier needs to know how to use a weapon, the safety, load, unload, all the basics. You go through all that. I believe in phase one, the only sight unit you use is the iron sight, which is useless, to be honest.
Why is that?
It's very close, right? It's good for FWAF, woods and forests, but open areas. You might start shooting through your own eyes.
So you get familiar with it. Do you have to take it apart?
Yeah, stripping and assembling it all, just to get used to all the working parts, how to clean it, maintain it.
And does that become your rifle at that stage? Or is it just a training rifle?
Throughout your training, you use the same rifle. all the way. But when you obviously when you leave that training facility, it's like, oh, I came here and I've got my own rifle here now, within the companies.
So what else is going on in phase one? Are you getting sort of lots of classroom work as well at that stage?
You get a fair basic bit, like the old new machine literacy tests, just to get a basic understanding of how intelligent you are.
And are you also being sort of introduced to sort of the armour ranks and uniform and different branches? Are you getting that kind of?
Yeah, you do get an introduction to the ranks. Usually just for a slideshow to tell you what their role is as a platoon commander, section commander. Get told what they do, how to recognise them, and their roles on the battlefield.
And during that period of time, I take it there's not kind of field exercises or anything like that at that stage?
Yeah, you get all your intro exercises. They're very simple, very basic. It's how to start a harbour, how to do a general section attack, really low-level skills and drills.
And the other element there is, obviously, are you given instruction on, you know, just basic daily living, you know, how to make bed, how to iron, that sort of stuff? Is that coming in the sort of basic
element? Yeah, that's all done in phase one. Starts off, they show you everything, silly stuff, how to fold your socks. You generally get a locker layout in training. It's different in battalion, you don't get it. But you're very much told, this is how you do it. Do it now, not later.
And are you inspected at this stage?
Yes, it's... You get a couple of chances, you know, get a rough idea, then they get a bit firmer, and the clothes start coming out on the floor. And
is that all part of introducing you to the kind of army life?
Yeah, sort of roughening you up a bit.
So you finish your phase one, and you go to phase two. How does that differ from the first phase?
Phase two is where you specialise in, your job. As an infantry, that's when you start getting more introduced into more weapons, increasing, rather than just doing a section attack, you do platoon attack, company, whatever's needed, and you do a fair amount of exercises for that.
And what new weapons have you been introduced to at that stage?
Initially, you just get shown the LSW, which is the rifle, just extended barrel, bipod legs, and then get introduced to the LMG, the light machine gun, like before the rifle, had all the safety features, stripping, assembling, all that stuff, and after that, you get taught in the GPMG, General Purpose Machine Gun, which is bigger, and you get shown grenades.
And are you out on the ranges with these weapons?
Yeah, you get a fair amount of time on the ranges. I can't think off the top of my head how many you do. Annually you get your APWT, which every soldier has to do, annual personal weapons test.
So you have to have a certain, you have to keep that skill that you've gained?
Yeah, you have to maintain a certain level of shooting.
And on that, are you out on the ranges quite a bit at that stage, as you go into phase two?
A fair bit. I mean, towards the end of training, phase two, you have a whole week in on the range, which you're moving live. Other than that, a lot of it's just static. It's just there all day, firing a couple of rounds down the range. That does you.
Is this the sort of basic thing that you're going to get for the rest of your military career? This is your grounding in those weapons, and you have to, into what them, you have to understand them and how they work and how to use them.
Well, yeah, you get taught everything. There's nothing more to be taught, but you do maintain it all the way through. It becomes second nature.
And that's with all of the weapons you mentioned there, is it? Because could you be called upon to use any of those weapons?
Yeah, quite easily. Yeah, just, if I was called now to use an LMG, I could quite happily go there and use it.
Tell me about how your instructors in throwing hand grenades. How do the instructors in throwing hand grenades?
Oh, it's very simple. They just say, right, take the clip off, pull the pin out, and just lob it. Just get down.
What else did you do in phase two?
In phase two, it's with the infantry, it's very similar to phase one, because it's just that, but perfected, I suppose is a good way to say it. Cause phase one, you're allowed a couple of hiccups, but phase two, for infantry, that is your job, close and engage with the enemy, so you're taught, this is how you attack. You go, you don't ask questions, you do your job, and that's it.
And you said mentioned the various attacks, stress sizes that you did before. Can you describe to me how sort of you make a sort of section attack? Is there a technique that you all employ?
The basic one is, once you become under enemy fire, hit the deck. Simple as, you don't want to get shot. Then the section commander will decide how he wants to work on the ground, depending on the enemy's location, numbers, all dependent on the ground. The most common one is the section is split into two fire teams, Charlie and Delta. More often than not, Delta will have a light machine gun, possibly a GPMG, but unlikely. Usually that fire team is left in fire support. They'll hammer that position constantly under control by the section 2IC, which is usually a Lance Corporal. Then Charlie fire team, again, depending on the ground, usually just goes left flanking, right flanking, whichever, however the ground permits.
And is it important, obviously, to move with the ground?
Yes, I mean, if you've got a low ditch on the right and high ground on the left, you're going to go in the ditch because they're not going to see you as easy. You can get as close as you want.
And how easy is that? Is that second nature to use your training, or do you have to sort of get your eye to understand the light?
It does come second nature, really. You don't realise you're doing it. You're looking around the field all the time. You think, oh, there's a good bit of cover there. Come under fire, hide there. That's bad down there. I won't go there.
And the larger attacks, obviously, both section size, how are they arranged?
Well, a platoon attack is basically, easiest way, it's a series of section attacks. Within a platoon, you have usually three sections. So within them sections, you'd be rolling one position with one section. Two section may be fire support, three section will be reserve. For example, if one section go roll a position and they come under fire from another position, three section might be called upon to take that one. And you just move through the positions.
Were you given an instruction in kind of defensive positions as well, I suppose?
You are, yes. But again, that was in that week-long live firing package. We mostly just did trench. Basically, just stay still, fire.
Are you taught how to dig a trench? Is there a specific method that they give you? Digging the ground, or do you have to do it to a certain size, certain pattern?
It depends how many men you want in there. You usually do a section level. It's very simple. You just deturf, dig. it has to be the height of the tallest man within the section. So, if you've got an 8-footer, you're not grateful for him.
Is the morning switching anything else there at that stage, though? Are you getting more about, Starry life or, other specialities that you might have to deal with?
Not really, to be honest, because training is, they bombard everything at you at once and you think it's a lot, but looking back, it's not.
What's your daily routine like during that kind of phase two? Is it a long day?
It can be. Again, every day is completely different. I can't think of one day that was the same, because for example, one day could be on a range, the other one could be doing an assault course, next day doing drill. There's no routine, really.
And am I right in thinking at the end of that, that's when you pass out at the end of that training?
Yeah, that's right. It's your final day, dressed up in your number twos, smart as anything. Families are there, march about, yeah.
Did you do any preparation for the passing operation?
Yeah, the last 2 weeks was solid drill, which is a bit of a mission, but it gets a bit tedious.
And how did you feel at the end of it? When you passed out, obviously, what are your feelings?
You're just so proud. Before you're there, you think, it won't be that good, it's just a parade, but when you're actually doing it, you feel so proud. You see your family clapping and officers applauding you. It's a brilliant experience.
And obviously, your family having the military connection, is that something that they knew that, is a big thing for
you? Yeah, because like I say, it was a big part of my family, so they were proud, very proud.
What's the next phase? And is it at this stage where you are posted to the regiment?
That is, yes. You usually have a bit of leave, I had a month off, and I hit battalion.
Did you have any choice in where you got?
I did. In my original careers office, they asked me where I wanted to go. Initially, they asked you what job you want. I told them infantry. They asked what division, what regiment, what battalion. So it was all done before I went into training.
And was your choice the Anglians?
It was, yeah.
Why was that?
Well, I'd heard that they were going out to Afghanistan. I knew I'd miss it, but I knew the experience that the blokes would have. I thought I could learn a lot off, and I have. So it was a good time to come to battalion.
So was that an issue of you wanting to actually, as a profession, do the job? In that kind of environment?
Yeah. I wanted to get to know the blokes who'd actually been there, done that, rather than just a bunch of pencil pushers.
So when did you join the team?
About a year ago, to be honest. 14th of January, 2008.
What was it like when you joined? Where did it take you to join the club, right?
That's right, yeah.
And what happens when you first arrive? What's the routine?
It's a bit of a gangbang to begin with. I first walked up and initially sorted into your company, into your rifle company. I was put in a CSX company. You go to see the officer commanding that or the company sergeant major, and he'll tell you where he wants you to go, what platoon. And you meet your platoon sergeant, and you get amongst the lads.
And how's that? Because obviously you're joining them and they've had, you know, active service, they've done lots of different things, you know. How has it been, sort of like the youngest member joining them like that? How do you start to mix?
Initially I just kept my mouth shut, listened to them, did what I was told. As long as you don't gob off, they're happy with you. I was accepted in about a month. They're happy days with me.
And are you kind of the lowest in the pecking order, or do you also need to get done?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, lowest in the low, yeah.
So do you do your duties off whatever
anything they don't want to do, I have to do.
And what did you start off doing when you arrived? What was everybody doing?
Again, because they'd literally just come off tour, so I was really chilled out. I mean, I think we had a month off after the first month of working. But initially it was literally getting back into routine, like back in the country now, no more messing about, basically, behave.
And what were you involved with day to day?
Day to day, at the beginning it was, to be honest, not a lot. It was, did fizz every day, like 5 mile run, maybe the odd tab now and again, but other than that there wasn't anything to do. We'd go on the range every now and again, but battalion life is a lot more chilled out, you have a lot more time to yourself.
Is there a marked contrast between that and these days when you did your training? Are you treated differently by, say, the NCOs?
Yeah, you're treated a lot better. I mean, in training they have to treat you like that, cause the way to think of a trainer is they break you down and build you back up stronger. In battalion though, you've done that, you've done all the training, you're a soldier, and they accept you for that. I mean, some of my best mates are lance corporals and corporals, they're a lot more chilled out.
And obviously, you know, you go off for your month's leave. What happens when you come back? Have you started a training package for anything at all?
I'd say about 4 months into battalion, our battalion was told that we were going to be on start riot training, just in case Ireland sparked up again, because they thought it would. So basically started that. Started around camp, getting used to the riot gear, moving around in it.
Okay, tell me about the riot gear. Can you describe it for me, what you wear?
Nickname RoboCop gear, because it's just plastic padding all over you. You wear that on top of your combats, and underneath your combats you have it's meant to be a warm kit, but it's just long johns and a long sleeve top. Fireproof.
What are you carrying?
It depends on your role. Shieldmen, they have a 4 foot shield and a baton. My role was a fireman, so I had a 4 foot shield, a baton, and a fire extinguisher. And you get the baton gunners. It's basically just fires a solid bit of rubber at you. And then you get your marksmen, who they're the only ones who carry a rifle ready to bear.
And who are they supposed to target?
They are a last resort, but it is literally if someone came out of a crowd with a pistol or any kind of firearm, grenade, anything that could directly kill you, and you take them out if your baton gunner couldn't.
And your role as a fireman, I mean, it sounds fairly obvious, but can you describe what you have to do with that?
Basically, I initially stood with the shieldman in the middle. Then I was taken back. Basically, a lot of petrol bombs are used, especially in the training phase. Put them out.
And are you just using an ordinary fire extinguisher for that?
Yeah, the kind you find anywhere.
With the training, how do you do the training?
Initially we started just around camp, but that was getting used to moving as a platoon in that structure, because you have your shieldmen in ranks of four pushing forward. You might have to wheel to the left, you might have to cover a junction to the left but move forward, so it's all getting used to moving in different ways. Second, we went down to Lydenhyde. That was a little package where there was Civ Pop, and they'd use baton rounds, like thrown against you. They come kick your shields just to provoke you. It's very disciplined how you have to just stand there and take it. Obviously, if they get close enough, you give them a whack, but it's just basically, it was very basic, getting used to using the kit and how to react to the Civ Pop.
Did they employ sort of snatch squadrons at all? Or say if there was a ring leader in the crowd?
Usually that's the front rank, and I can't remember the command, but basically you tell them to bound forward. If he's just in front of you, you usually bound about, I'd say about 20 metres. Again, the platoon commander can change that on the ground, but just dash forward. Usually 9 times out of 10 they'll run. If they don't, usually they'll fall behind that front rank, and the second rank will grab them and take them to the vehicles.
And are there different sort of states of readiness that you use, relating to how difficult the situation might be?
Yeah, there is, and we did it by a traffic light colour. Green was very basic, you just stood there, your shields rested on the ground, baton hidden or just rested on top of the shield. That's when, if there is any Civ Pop, even if they're a fair distance away. If they start coming towards you, you'll give them a verbal warning. If they still keep coming, that's when you give an amber. That's when your shield comes up and you just held it ready. If you're given red, that's when your baton comes out ready, and that's when they're actually throwing stuff at you, or they're actually up in your face.
And I hope we discussed, what are you wearing on your head when you're doing this?
On your head, you've got, covering your whole face, you've got a balaclava. On top of that, you've got your helmet, which is your basic issued helmet, and attached to that, you have a visor, which is a pain in the ass to get on.
What is that?
Well, you have to take your helmet apart, attach a couple of clips to the sides, attach the visor, which always comes off, and then there's a nape at the back just to cover your neck from any fire or incoming.
And you know, you described this word, is it fireproof, the padding that you're wearing?
The plastic padding. That isn't. Obviously, it protects you, but issued clothing is fire resistant to a degree. Anything like that, you won't get burned.
And is this, you mentioned this was potentially for a deployment to Northern Ireland?
Yeah. That's when they believed that they might. It was there's no chance, really. They're just, to be honest, they're just saying for the battalion to do.
And have you chatted to members of the battalion who've done tours of Northern Ireland?
I haven't, no.
Okay. So you did that. What other things were you doing at the same time?
We literally did that solid until after the period when we believed there could be a possible deployment. After that, we went into what we were doing before, just basic fitness, ranges. It's very repetitive.
Do you get a chance to do driving or other kind of skills like that?
Yeah, there's a lot of courses available. I mean, when I first rocked up, I got put on a Cat B driving within the first month. So got my car licence, got put on a signals carder, so I'm qualified to be a platoon signaller. And so October time I got my Cat C, so I can drive lorries now.
Tell me about that, how you get the instructions for the driving. How do we go about doing it in the army?
Usually you have a representative in your company who will talk to the guys down at MT. They're the guys who organise where you're going, how you're doing it. You talk to your representative, he'll go down, see if there's any courses available. If there's courses available, they'll get you put on it. My Cat B was up in Leckenfield, near Hull. That was run by a civilian firm. So it's military do work for this.
So is that literally just the sort of standard driving that you do? You do it in normally, like cars and that sort of thing?
Yeah, it's exactly the same as a civilian. You just do your drive in a normal car. If you want to drive the military vehicles, you have to do what's called a conversion, which again is run by the MT. It's usually done on the camp that you're based. And it's just basically they introduce you to a bigger vehicle.
What's that? What bigger vehicle is that?
It's just the military Land Rover, but because it's armoured or just a heavier vehicle, you have to do a conversion to be able to drive it.
Is it more difficult to drive in a car?
Not really. It's just one of the things you have to do it legally.
And you've also carried on to do the, you said the
Cat C.
Is that that's the military truck, is it?
I'd have to do a conversion, which I haven't done yet, but I can drive a civilian lorry, a rigid lorry.
And where did you get instruction for that then?
That was down in Folkestone, again run by a civilian firm within the military base.
You know, when you're doing this course, are you doing that all day long?
Yeah, it's an intensive course. I mean, my Cat C, because I'd already driven, it was only a week-long course, but you drive every day. Usually when you're down there, you're in a pair within the vehicle, and you do hour on, hour off sort of thing. It's one driving, one in the passenger seat, obviously with an instructor.
And driving, obviously, something as heavy as a lorry, what are the things that are different from driving a car? What have you got to be more aware of? What's the differences?
Not a lot, really. It's just the size. That's all you've got to take into consideration. For example, when you're turning, you have to move further out before you pull into that turn. I personally found it easier than driving a car.
What's that?
I don't know.
Okay, you also said you'd done a course on signals. What did that entail?
That was a two-week course done within camp with the signals platoon, because every platoon needs a signaller to work with the platoon commander. While you're there, you learn basic radio, really. It's done on a Bowman, which is what the platoon signal carries. You also learn what each section commander carries and how to fix, well, basic fix, the PRR, which every man has.
And can you take me through the kind of instruction you got for those couple of weeks? How it works? What was the first thing they teach you? How did it progress?
It was very classroom, because a lot of it was PowerPoint presentations, and when you got hands-on, it was done out on the back area, doing Navex, but radioing in every time you got to a checkpoint to the whoever was in charge. The hands-on is very structured in that it's now do this, right? Yeah, and they'll explain what you're doing, what it will affect, and then they move on to the next bit. So, for example, the Bowman, the first thing you're taught is how to put it together, because it comes in a series of parts. The next thing you're taught is how to tune it, get the frequency right. The next thing you're shown is how to deliver a message.
Is there a special language
that you can use
for that?
There is, yeah. We use a phonetic alphabet whenever using just single letters. But generally, it is very, you keep it short and sweet. And you use call signs all the time, you never give names.
So how important is discipline, really, or, why is discipline?
It is very important, because you could give anything away. That's what it is, it's communications. You're telling someone where you are, what you're doing. The last thing you want is the enemy to say, oh, that's where he is.
And with that, you obviously running through it for 2 weeks. What kind of level are you at, really, at that stage? Are you at the level then to actually do it as a job?
Yeah, you're very competent to do it within the platoon. I mean, I did my course a month later. I was on an exercise as a signaller.
And on that exercise, who were you signalling to? Was it within the platoon? Was it in the?
Being the platoon signaller, you're in charge of the SIGS equipment within the platoon. Your main job is to follow the platoon commander around, because you are telling him what's going on, because, well, on the ground, he's too busy thinking about things he has to do. But you're on the company net, which basically means you can hear communication between your platoon, the other two platoons in your company, and also the company HQ, which is usually the officer commanding.
And how do you relay your messages to the platoon officer?
Verbally. Anytime you stay right on his back, you have to tell him in his face.
And is it important, obviously, in that level